This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, it's that time of month when we check in with our veteran political analysts about the latest issues dominating the U.S. political landscape. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. This month marks 1 year since Robert Mueller was appointed as special counsel to take over the investigation into Russia's meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election, as well as to determine if associates of the Trump campaign aided Russia's interference. The inquiry allows Mr. Mueller to investigate any matter that arises from this investigation, so it has expanded to examine whether President Donald Trump might have obstructed the investigation itself. Let's recall that U.S. intelligence agencies have unanimously concluded that Russia carried out a campaign to influence the outcome of the 2016 elections by denigrating Hillary Clinton and boosting Donald Trump. President Trump consistently denies that there was any coordination or collusion between his campaign and Moscow, despite the fact that Mr. Mueller has secured indictments against 19 people and 3 firms, including senior figures from the Trump campaign. Mr. Trump continues to try to discredit or undermine the investigation, calling it, quote, a witch hunt. Well, we'll also review the results of a recent spate of primary elections to see what they reveal about the shape of the upcoming midterm congressional elections, among other related issues. With us to discuss the ever-tumultuous U.S. political landscape are our two veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and that's a think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler, he's senior vice president for policy at Third Way, and that's a think tank also based here in Washington. And both regulars join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
John Fortier, let's begin with you, and let's talk about the primaries. And first, review for us the purpose of these primary contests in the run-up to our midterm congressional elections.
Well, America has, over its history, moved to a place where the people really weigh in on who the candidates for each of the major parties are. So pretty much all of our offices, from president down to the federal offices and many state offices, there is an election for a Republican candidate on one side and a Democratic candidate on the other. And sometimes that means that party leaders are not as powerful. They're not able to put their stamp on who the nominee is. And I guess I would put as number one example of that, Donald Trump was certainly not the pick of establishment Republicans and yet went to the Republican electorate in the primaries, won that election. So we've had a series of these across the country for sometimes state and federal offices. States hold them on different days. So we have Senate and House and governor elections where the Republicans and Democrats have been picking their candidates across the country.
And before I turn to Jim Kessler, what's your takeaway from the most recent contests in Pennsylvania, Nebraska? We just recently saw contests in Arkansas, Kentucky, and Texas, and Georgia. What's the takeaway on the Republican and Democratic side?
Broadly speaking, midterm elections go against the president's party. President Trump has some low popularity numbers. That usually is a recipe for seeing enthusiasm on the Democratic side and then a good election result coming down the pike. So a good chance for Democrats to perhaps take the House of Representatives or maybe the Senate. You know, I think the election results recently and the polls have been slightly more favorable for Donald Trump. His approval numbers are up a bit. The generic congressional ballot is up a little bit for Republicans, but it's still at a quite a low number. So he's gone from being in deep trouble to, you know, slightly less deep trouble. I still think that's a good sign for Democrats. Literally in the last round of elections, there were a couple of seats that didn't go as much Democratic in the state of Arkansas. That is something maybe Republicans will try to hang their hat on, but it's, you know, it's just a couple seats. So I think there's been a little blip in the Republican direction, but the big story is the energy and the direction of these elections has been, you know, much more toward the Democratic side.
And that leads me to turn to Jim Kessler. So Jim, I know you have your finger on the pulse, particularly of Democratic candidates. How are they doing and what's your takeaway from this recent spate of primary contests?
So we're in the mid to early stage of primaries. They're going to run really all through September in different states. Different states do it at different times. We've learned a couple things. One is turnout is really high for American elections and primaries. They're high on the Democratic side and they're also high on the Republican side. So there's a lot of interest. The thing that I think is happening that is most interesting and frankly most underreported is that there's this view that all of the energy is on the far left of the Democratic Party. That's where the activism is. That's where the passion is. But if you look at who is winning these early primary races in areas of the country that are more moderate, in places where Republicans hold seats, the moderate Democrat is winning those primary races really about 75% of the time, which means that when you get to the general election, a moderate is going to be running against a Republican versus someone who's very far left, and it gives Democrats just a greater opportunity to win that seat in November. So I think if you're a Democrat, you feel like we're nominating the right type of candidate to win in these areas for the most part.
So on that point, I generally agree with Jim. I would say we can go back to an election back in 2006 where Democrats were in a similar position. They had an unpopular president, George W. Bush, and they did very well. They took a lot of seats. There, I think you saw Democrats running some really pretty conservative candidates in conservative parts of the country and winning some seats that maybe you wouldn't have expected to. I'm not sure I see that exactly this case. I think we do see a lot of establishment Democrats winning. I think we saw in the case of Pennsylvania a stronger, more conservative Democrat winning in a primary that I think that's the type of candidate I'm talking about from 2006. Our country's pretty polarized. So the Democrats have a chance to pick up a lot of kind of swing seats and middle close seats. Can they put some people in some of these more red states and win some seats if the wave is going with them? I haven't seen that yet. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that's something to watch for.
Well, John Fortier, what about women? We saw women winning in Pennsylvania. Unbelievably, there's not one woman currently among the delegation from Pennsylvania, but it looks like there will be next year. What do you say about the number of women who are running and their prospects?
And not to pick on the state of Pennsylvania, but we've never had a governor or senator who was a woman from Pennsylvania, and we don't have a single member of a large congressional delegation as a woman. And we know that there are strong, accomplished women from Pennsylvania, like our host here, but I do think we're going to see that. There are seven women who won primaries, and a number of them are likely to be elected to the Congress next time. Leaving aside Pennsylvania, you know, in this question of energy, certainly I do think we see women are, they vote more Democratic anyway. They're also more likely to vote than men in neutral elections, and there's some energy on that side. So seeing how women turn out, I think that is the key point for Democrats, and that's part of what's driving the energy of the sort of vote against Donald Trump.
Well, as a native Pennsylvanian, I would be very happy to see some more women in the delegation. Well, back to you, Jim Kessler, about that very point. Given the energy on the part of women, we're seeing so many more women and even female veterans, which is very interesting.
Right. Chrissy Houlihan of Pennsylvania is a great female veteran who just won, and we had it in Texas as well, and Kentucky. I think there's two things that are happening that are both aiding women in this race. First of all, there's the Donald Trump factor. And, you know, if you're looking at people who are sort of most angry at Donald Trump in terms of his behavior, women are more angry than men. They're more activated than men. And they're saying, like, okay, you know, I need to do something. I need to get involved. The second is when you're watching who is winning these races, it's not just women who are doing a great job. It's candidates who have never run for office before. And so in a lot of these primaries, the woman is in her 40s or in her 50s. She said, I've done this, I've done that, I've done that. I feel called to run at this moment in time. I never thought I'd be doing this. And voters are picking this candidate who is not part of the state legislature or not a former mayor. They're looking for somebody entirely new. And more women are entirely new to politics running this time than men.
Well, back to you, John Fortier, with respect to Republicans in particular and the role of Donald Trump. So many Republican members of Congress are not running again. So that speaks perhaps to the fact that they're aware that there's this energy on the Democratic side. They're afraid to lose. What will be the role of Donald Trump? Will he help or hurt Republicans in the upcoming midterm elections? And what will be the Republican strategy in your view?
You make a good point that some of the energy on the Democratic side has already had an effect in that it is much easier to recruit people to run on the Democratic side. It looks like a good year. And on the Republican side, well, maybe it's, you know, not the year to run, or maybe it's the year to retire and not take a chance to lose. So you've seen already in the strength of the candidates, that's been helpful. Look, the numbers are moving maybe a little in the Republican direction. Maybe that's a little bit of something to hang on to, but I think that's a tough thing. Donald Trump is still quite popular in quite a number of states in the country. He does not command a majority of support, but there'll be plenty of states where candidates will be happy to run on Donald Trump. In fact, in the primaries, most of the Republican candidates are not going to be running anti-Trump messages. They are not, and they would lose if they were. So the marginal seats are people who are in tricky positions. And I think one thing we've seen in recent days on some of the immigration issues, we have some moderate Republicans or some endangered Republicans who, you know, express at least some different opinions with Donald Trump with respect to the Dreamers. Those are the people who are going to try to balance these two issues. Some of them are going to get caught up in the wave because it's just too hard to win in that way. It's a very tricky way to win. Certainly those people also will emphasize their local work, their service to the state, their longtime history, and maybe their independence. But look, I think for the most part, most Republicans will be running with Donald Trump, and they'll be in safe places that will embrace him.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, since you have your finger on the pulse of Democrats in particular, on what message will they run? Because we hear Republicans egging on the Democrats, saying that the Democrats are going to try to impeach President Trump should they get the majority. This would presumably energize the Republican base since they wouldn't want to see that happen. So given that narrative, on what message and issues do you see the Democrats running to sort of avoid that pitfall, falling into a trap, perhaps?
So it's interesting because, as I noted earlier, a lot of the moderates are winning these primary races in the seats that could flip from Republican to Democrat. And I've been looking at their websites to see what they're saying. So a lot of this is going to be how popular Donald Trump is. And if he's very unpopular, you know, they have the wind at their back. But you see that these candidates are talking a little bit about Donald Trump, but what they're mostly talking about is two things. One is jobs in the economy, and the second is healthcare and the Affordable Care Act and making sure that it's not taken away from folks. If there's a third thing that they mention, it's working together to get things done. So they are bringing a positive message on this. There's an economic message, there's a healthcare message, and then there's a getting things done message. Most of this is going to be disappointment with Donald Trump, disappointment with the Republican Congress, and some of it will be the positive things that they feel Democrats can do. That is the nature of these midterm elections.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. And we're discussing the latest issues dominating the U.S. political landscape. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find that download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Donald Temitope Adelusi. He's a loyal fan in Ado Ekiti, Ekiti State in southwestern Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our guests. And now, John Fortier, let's take a look at the anniversary of Robert Mueller's appointment as special counsel looking into the Russia probe. As I said in my introduction, the intelligence establishment unanimously concluded that Russia did meddle in the 2016 election and did so actually to help Mr. Trump and hurt Mrs. Clinton. And we've seen now a number of indictments that Mueller has made, and some of whom are Trump associates, others many Russians. The last time we were at these microphones, President Trump's personal lawyer's home and office were raided for information potentially linked to the Russia investigation. So here's the question. If Mr. Trump does assert that he, as he constantly does on Twitter and in the media, that there was no collusion or conspiracy between Moscow and his campaign, why doesn't he just let this play out? Why does he continue to denigrate law enforcement agencies like the FBI and even criticize Mr. Mueller's investigation?
Well, you're right that Donald Trump didn't have an anniversary cake for Bob Mueller. He's certainly not celebrating this. Any administration does not like and does not benefit from having an investigation against them. Certainly, there is real information about Russia's involvement in the elections, and there are figures who were part of the Trump campaign at various times, especially because of their business dealings with Russia and Ukraine, who have serious legal problems, and Robert Mueller has pursued them. So there are a number of angles that I think are clearly not good and are bad and embarrassing for the president. I think the core issue that most Democrats, I think, believe that at least it's part of the narrative or enough has been proved or at least something will come out is, you know, is there a more direct connection between the campaign and the Russian involvement in the elections? And the Trump administration will say, no, there's a lot of smoke, but there's no fire. There's a lot of meetings, but there's no evidence that real work was done between these two parties. I will say, I think public opinion is still in a middle position. If Donald Trump were to fire Bob Mueller or Rod Rosenstein or somehow be seen as taking some of the people out who are doing the investigation, most members of Congress, most on the Republican side, are still very strongly against that and would speak up. But, you know, there may be some change in that. I think the couple of factors are that as the investigation goes on for a longer time, any administration is going to say, look, this has to be wrapped up. It has taken a good chunk of the administration, takes away from the president's powers, just as Bill Clinton and others criticized his special counsel or his independent counsel. That sort of argument will be made. And the other important argument that Democrats and Republicans are disagreeing a lot on is the president has been making a point of re-litigating or bringing up again why this investigation began in the first place. Was there a real reason for the Obama administration, the administration of the other party, the Democratic Party, to begin investigating the Trump campaign, the electoral campaign of the other party? There may be real reasons. Maybe we've reached that level. But certainly there are more voices saying, well, we want to know more. Was there a real reason for having some informants talk to people on the campaign? Were there reasons for having some surveillance of some figures on the campaign? Or was there more of a political motive? And I don't think we see that being proved, but there are questions about that. And there are people out there, even former President George W. Bush, saying, you know, both of those angles should be investigated. So we shouldn't get rid of the Mueller investigation, but we should treat that as a legitimate inquiry. Did they step over the line by going into politics back in the day and getting involved in a partisan way while there was an election going on?
Jim Kessler, John Fortier brings up this allegation by President Trump that there was an informant. He calls this person a spy, but it's an informant that the FBI sent an informant to talk to three of Trump's advisors during the 2016 campaign. These advisors were suspected of having contacts with Russia. Now, contrary to what John says, many Democrats and many other lawmakers from both sides of the aisle, particularly Democrats, though, are saying that the person who's crossing the line is Mr. Trump and not the FBI in this case, because they were perfectly within their right to do this. So I'd like to get your take on, is the Russia investigation, especially the part that is looking at potential ties between Russia's interference and members of the Trump campaign. Is that a lot of smoke and mirrors, but we still don't know? And what about this demand by President Trump that the Justice Department investigate whether or not this informant was placed there for political reasons? How do you see that?
Let me first say, I agree with John, there's a lot of smoke out there, but there's also definitely fire. What we don't know is who set the fire. We don't know if the Trump team, the Trump campaign, or Donald Trump himself had anything to do with setting this fire. We know, as you pointed out, that Russia got involved in this election. They tried to tilt this election in favor of Donald Trump. The latest report on that was a bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee report that implicated Russia. And I just want to say that that act by Russia comes very close to being an act of war against the United States. And those are the words of Dick Cheney. So that's how serious this is.
And of course, Dick Cheney was the Republican vice president of
George W. Bush. And so we're looking at something of that level of seriousness. And if the FBI or intelligence agencies in America sometime in 2016 during the campaign are seeing something that is that much of an aggressive move by an enemy foreign country against our democracy, and they don't do something, I think that that is a scandal in and of itself. My personal view is Barack Obama did far too little when there was evidence that there was Russia involvement in this election. I think it is one of the huge mistakes of his presidency. On that, Donald Trump right now and the administration, they are trying to destroy the credibility of the FBI and of the Mueller investigation, because that is their defense at this point. I don't know if Trump is guilty or not guilty of collusion, but they are trying to make the Mueller investigation as illegitimate as possible, and they try and do something every single day to make it illegitimate.
Indeed, that does seem to be the strategy, short of firing Mueller, which would really, as you said, John Fortier, really cause a major outcry by both Democrats and Republicans. So I guess short of that, he's just trying to discredit the investigation. But Jim Kessler brought up another point, and this is the other part of the investigation, and that is into potential obstruction of justice. So I'd like you to address that, because it seems some critics could characterize what Mr. Trump is doing as, if not obstruction of justice, certainly paving the way to that. Some of his actions, whether it was last year, firing of FBI Director James Comey, and some other behaviors. What about that particular angle of the investigation?
Look, I think that is a tricky angle. I think there are some earlier actions of the president that reportedly Robert Mueller is looking into, and whether it's his comments about Michael Flynn with former director James Comey and the firing of Comey. There are big constitutional questions here. One is that it is hard to say that someone who doesn't work for the executive branch isn't sort of under the president. And ultimately, our law is today that we've kind of insulated Bob Mueller from political influence. But, you know, maybe ultimately the president has the power to sort of move in that direction. So I think that makes things difficult to say something is obstructing justice when, of course, the president is in charge of the department. Look, if we get to these points, it's a political question, which the Congress has the power of impeachment. And that is the thing that I think if something is at a very high level, that it's not going to come from Robert Mueller prosecuting Donald Trump in court. It's from Robert Mueller putting information before the Congress and persuading enough Republicans that there's enough wrong to remove a president of their own party. And so that's the kind of deepest constitutional question. I certainly might criticize some of the way in which Donald Trump talks about various actors, but I don't think we should expect that the president isn't and his allies aren't going to be critical of these investigations. Again, I do think the Clinton administration and Ken Starr, there was certainly a lot of criticism of going too far. And I do think this real question, I think Jim is right on the question that if the Obama administration thinks there's something serious enough to cross typical lines of not going into politics with an investigation, then there might be a justification for that. But it is a very serious line to involve the powers of government in a campaign, especially of the other party. And I don't want to second guess people because we don't know all the stories, but you know, one could certainly be very worried about Russian influence and what Russia is doing, but still trying to find out about that without looking directly at that campaign and looking at other sources and using other methods. So I think both types of investigation have some credit, usually with different types of people. Certainly many Republicans think it's all a witch hunt, but I think there is more interest now in the story of how exactly did this come about. And if we don't see that the investigation leads to some of the worst things, I think some of those questions will be raised at a higher level. Was it worth going into the actual campaign of somebody of the other party and using some of the tools of government to look at that campaign and what they were doing if there wasn't something that they were doing that was at the highest levels of wrongdoing?
Well, Jim Kessler, you get the last word on this one, and that is with respect to Mr. Trump's demand that the Justice Department look into how this informant was placed into his campaign and whether or not that in itself is some sort of crossing of a line which undermines the independence and the integrity of the Justice Department. And this other angle of the investigation, which is into potential obstruction of justice, not just the Russia interference and potential ties with the Trump campaign.
So I think on obstruction of justice and, you know, whether the Mueller investigation is going too far, I think if it turns out that the big things that they find are, you know, the payment to Stormy Daniels, the person that he had an affair with, that it's sort of that level of crime, just like Monica Lewinsky with Bill Clinton, I think that you've gone far afield. But I would have liked to see Donald Trump do something very, very different at the start of this, which was to say the Russian involvement in this election, and he could say at that point, which I knew nothing about and had nothing to do with, is something that is deeply disturbing, and we are going to investigate this aggressively. I think we'd be in a very, very different place, assuming, giving Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt, that he did not commit a crime and did not commit collusion. But he began this whole thing by denying that this was happened at all and by lying again and again about it and changing his story. And now he's in the bed that he made. And he's using desperate measures like calling for some sort of investigation here or there or saying that somebody infiltrated my campaign, which sounds like an exaggeration, because he acted like a guilty person from day one. And that is the problem. And so we'll see what the Mueller report has ultimately. I don't know how long this will take. 1 year's not a long time, but we'll find out. The Mueller report will probably be definitive.
Well, when it comes out, we'll definitely be talking about that. And on that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, as always, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Wagner Roberts. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.